Matthew chapter 6, verse 25 to verse 34. Therefore, I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more important than food, and the body more important than clothes? Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? Who of you, by worrying, can add a single hour to your life? And why do you worry about clothes? See how the lilies of the field grow. They do not labour or spin, and yet I tell you that not even Solomon in all his splendour was dressed like one of these. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, will he not much more clothe you, O you of little faith? So do not worry, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? For the pagans run after all these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow has as worry, sorry, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. I can testify to that. I'm always in trouble, but then you probably know that. I was struck earlier, David was talking about bells, and it made me think about the way that most of us respond to bells. If you were to hear a bell go off right now, what would you do? Yeah, you'd think it was a fire alarm. Yeah, and who woke up this morning to the sound of a bell, an alarm clock? Yeah. Sorry? Music. Oh, that's far less harsh than a bell, isn't it? Yeah, I need a bell. Oh, my goodness me, it's time to get up. Bells are one of those things that we often associate with trouble, with difficulty, with danger. You're driving down the road and you hear an alarm or a bell going off. It's probably going to be a fire engine or an ambulance or something, and it's letting you know it's coming so you can get out of the way. And I wonder, when we hear bells ringing, how often that causes us to worry. What's going on? What should I do? How should I react? You see, the thing is, we all worry about something. We all worry about something, don't we? Some of us are worried about the practical stuff of life. What we'll eat, where we'll live, what kind of job we'll have, when will I have enough to retire? Did I put enough in my pension pot so that I could retire? Others of us are worried about the state of the country. Yeah, thank you. If only some of our politicians would worry about the state of the country a little bit more. The economy's struggling, the FTSE's depressed, the exchange rate has fallen, share prices in some companies have fallen. It all seems like economic doom and gloom. And then, don't get me started. There's the state of the NHS. The waiting time for an ambulance, not enough GPs, the cost of medicines, and don't even go there about dentists. Public services slashed. Austerity, austerity, austerity. When will it ever end? It wasn't like this in the past. Don't even get me thinking about international affairs. Trump? Macron? Nicola Sturgeon? The whole debacle of, I'm not even going to say it, that thing that Brexit. The rise of nationalism, populism, the rise of the far right. Or is it the far left? Hang on a second, who are we supposed to be against? And what are we supposed to be for? the collapse of the values of capitalism, the destruction of the environment, plastic and pollution in the seas, human trafficking, the explosion of illegal drugs, the endless wars and conflicts. And then there's my situation. You would not believe the stress that I'm under, the pain that I feel, how complicated my life is. And don't get me started on the kids, or the grandkids, or the neighbours' kids, or any kid in general. We all worry about something. And some of us worry an awful lot about a lot of things. Now, I don't want to downplay how we feel about these things. Our feelings are there to help us to acknowledge there's something going on. And if we're feeling worried, our feeling is telling us that we're feeling uncomfortable with the way things are. Sometimes life is hard. But when we weigh up the reality of life against Jesus' teaching, we might be tempted to kind of go, maybe Jesus didn't mean what he clearly seems to imply that he does mean. Because how can he say don't worry when we're all worried about something? Is Jesus just setting us up to fail? Are we worried that if we fail to do the things the way that Jesus tells us to do, we're going to fail even more, and so therefore I'm worried about worrying? And some of you worry me, because you're halfway not worried enough. And then tonight we've got the carol service. I've got Christmas presents to buy. Still the tree to put up and decorate. I don't know what to get. I'm worried about whether the shopping will arrive in time. And... Breathe. The English word worry comes from an old Germanic word, which means strangle. Ever wonder why dogs who chase sheep are called sheep worriers? It's not because dogs make sheep upset. Putting that out there. It's because sheep worrying is when a dog, or in the olden times a wolf, would grab a sheep by the neck, by the throat, and it would clamp its jaws so it couldn't breathe. And eventually, it died. Being worried basically means allowing ourselves to be strangled or suffocated by the things that concern us. We feel like something, or perhaps someone, has got us by the throat. That life is slowly being squeezed out of us. It's literally choking us to death. Who thinks they're still worried? And that's why Jesus' teaching at the heart of this Sermon on the Mount is so important. Because Jesus is basically saying, don't let these things in life grab you by the throat. Don't let them squeeze the life out of you. Is your pursuit of food or drink strangling your life? Then let it go. Breathe. Let it go. If your pursuit of fashion is suffocating, thank you, is suffocating other parts of your life, then get some balance. Get some perspective. Our purpose in life is not to get trapped by things. Things are given to us as a gift from God. They're things that we are to be master over, not to be mastered by. Jesus points out at the end of our reading that the people who don't know Yahweh God are the ones who live like this. Instead, those who love God don't need to live in ways that strangle life from them. Instead, as we've literally just been singing, they are called to be life enhancing. They're called to be free from those kind of pressures and struggles and strains. Our purpose is to live life to the full and not to have it squeezed away. And the good news is that we don't even have to ask God to provide for our needs. When was the last time you heard a blade of grass praying, "Please, Lord, could you clothe me?" Or a beautiful flower saying, "Please, Lord, I'd like a few more petals to my flower." God, in his wisdom, gives what is needed in season. We don't have to worry. We don't even need to ask. Now, hear me right. That doesn't mean we shouldn't be grateful for when God does provide. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is that God knows our needs before we've even asked. Psalm 139, before even one word is on our lips, God knows it completely. So what are our needs? How is God meeting those? And God provides for all that we need because, as we've been reminded already, he loves us. He doesn't just love us a little bit. He doesn't just love us because we've earned it. He doesn't just love us because we deserve it. He loves us because he loves us. And he doesn't love us 5%. Or even pass mark of an exam. 50%. Grade A. 70%. No. It's 100%. It's 100%. God can't love us any more than he does already because he loves us completely. It's not like us, is it? We can, as John said, we can find love hard. We can find love costly. We find that when we give love, we can run out of energy to love if we're not being refilled with that love day by day. If we're loving in our own strength and not in God's strength, we can run out of that love. We can be exhausted. Compassion fatigue, that gets called. God's not like that. If God poured out the entirety of his love on each one of us, and every other person on this planet, how much as a percentage do you think of God's love has been exhausted? None. Well, it's none. It's 0.0 recurring percent. We cannot exhaust the love of God, however much he gives to us, however deep, however great, however significant our need. He gives because he loves us, and because he loves us, he's already taken care of it before we have even asked. Be encouraged. Be encouraged. So instead of being anxious, let's try instead being grateful. Let's try being grateful in advance. Knowing that what we need in God's grace has already been provided. Which one of us can change the world just by wishing it were different? And who could say that their idea of how the world should change wouldn't have unintended consequences that would make the whole a whole lot worse. Anybody ever tried to meddle in somebody else's affairs and then wish they really hadn't? Because it's all turned out a whole lot worse than it had done before they'd got started. Welcome to my world. But letting these big questions strangle the life from us is not what God wants for us. He wants for us to do what Eric was talking about last Sunday. He wants us to cast our anxieties on him. Why? Because he cares for us. Because he loves us. And so we can have confidence that when God says he's going to do the stuff that only God can, God's going to do the stuff that only God can. There's kind of a logic there, isn't there? Even I can work out that kind of logic. And so we don't need to get worked up about it. Now, hear me right. I'm not saying that we shouldn't do what is right in the world. I'm not saying that we shouldn't be active agents for God in the places in which he's placed us. I'm saying quite the opposite, in fact. We do have a responsibility as God's stewards to care for this planet. We do have a responsibility to actively get involved in solving the problems of pollution and global warming, etc. We do have a responsibility to show love by ensuring people have enough to eat and clean water to drink and to not be exploited in their work. As Christians, we should be leading the charge for social justice on this planet with every ounce of our strength. But it should not consume us. If it consumes us, then we're doing it in our own strength. We're not doing it in his strength. What we should be consumed by is simply this: the love of God. The love of God that's been shown to each one of us. The love of God that he calls us to share with others. That's what we should be consumed by. That's what we should be seeking after. That's really what that bit at the end of the passage I read out means. If you want to know what it is to seek righteousness, it's do good. Not just be good, but do good. Do good to those that you live amongst. Do good to those that you encounter. And not just doing good because you're going to get something back in return. That's not righteousness and that's not love. That's a transaction. But doing good simply because we're in the right place at the right time and the Spirit of God is calling us and motivating us and showing us what to do. So let me give you an example of what it is to be consumed by love. At about 12, maybe 13 years of age, I'm pretty sure that this young woman had a few concerns in her life. She was about to get married. Ooh, that's a bit young, isn't it? She was about to move into her new husband's house and live with his family. Not sure that many of us would choose that as an option these days, would we? And that means she's got to get on with her mother-in-law. I'm so tempted to make some mother-in-law jokes, but I know I'll pay for it if I do. She has tasks to perform. And if she doesn't perform them well, she might be judged. Will she be up to them? Can she please her new husband? What would happen if all of this went wrong? Where would she go? Who would she turn to? Anybody worked out what I'm talking about here? Mary. The only good bit of news I can see in Mary's horizon at this point in time is that there's no requirement for her to take maths and English GCSE before she can leave college. Result, I would say, for many of our young people today, struggling with unattainable, as they find it, objectives. So just imagine Mary's state of mind when she discovers that she's pregnant. We think it's tough being a single mother today, and in many cases it is. And in many cases there's all sorts of backstory that leads to somebody being a single mother. And in many cases it's not a state they would choose. But circumstances have turned out that way. But just imagine for a moment if you were a single mother in a time when the expectation on single mothers is that they would be stoned to death. Kind of puts things in a kind of perspective, doesn't it? Mary had every reason to expect that when the elders of the village, when those finger-pointy neighbours who were waggling their curtains to see what was going on in the neighbours' homes, when they found out about her situation, she had every reason to expect they would call a meeting together, they'd pick up lumps of rock and they would kill her. Kind of puts things in perspective, doesn't it? But Mary didn't let her concerns strangle her. However strongly she might have been feeling them on the inside, however much they may have kept her awake at night, instead she chose to embrace life. The life that God had invited her into. There were more reasons for Mary to say no to God, but she chose yes. She chose yes. And the rest, as they say, is history. And so I wonder what life-changing, world-impacting and God-loving situations we might encounter. Maybe even today. I wonder whether we will feel weighed down or strangled by the events, as if our life is literally being squeezed out from us, or whether we will breathe, filling our thoughts with the God who loves us completely, who sent his Son, Jesus, to be our light in the darkness, and his Spirit to be a beacon of hope. Maybe you feel as if you've had your life worried out from you. The wolves and the dogs of life have been attacking and you're left struggling for breath. And so I want to invite us this morning to just breathe. Breathe. Can I invite you just to close your eyes for a second and just to breathe in and hold that breath. To feel your lungs being filled with breath. And know that you are alive. And then just to let that breath slowly leave your body. And know that you're ready to take a new breath. That God is the same as you take in that next breath, breathe in. God has not changed, but the world has moved on. And it's okay. And breathe out. And as we breathe in, and as we breathe out, and as we breathe in, and as we breathe out, so we still our minds and can listen for the voice of God. There may be all sorts of reasons why we feel that we can't be still. The things that are driving our worry, our anxieties. But we can be still. And we can feel the breath entering our body and know that God is with us. And we can breathe out and know that we're still okay. Because the next breath is coming. God has provided what we need without even asking. And so why are we so afraid? Jesus is closer than the air we breathe. At Christmas we celebrate his coming, but today I've wanted to focus on his ongoing presence. Jesus came in the past, but he is here today in the present. Breathe in. Breathe out. Breathe in. Breathe out. Jesus is a presence that we can experience wherever we are, whatever we're doing, whatever the circumstances. Brexit. Or not. God doesn't change. In good times or in bad, God doesn't change. When we feel on top of the world or in the pits of despair, God doesn't change. And his promise to you is the breath that you are breathing right now. Whilst there is life, there is hope.